The members, we are going to get started. I would like to call the meeting to order. First, we are going to have some testimony, so I think we're going to do that first now. If I can call Joy Massard down. She wanted to do some testimony on the bill, and then we'll move right into the bill after that. And grab some food. I want to, while she's coming down, I want to thank everybody. This is our very last meeting, we think, unless some other kind of issue comes up. So I especially want to thank the staff. Last time I forgot Melba, so Melba, you get a special thank you. And Emily and Danielle, who are not in the room. I think they're coming soon, hopefully here. And Sarah and Matthew have done a lot of work the last couple days to pull this together. The pages, we appreciate all your work. Hopefully, get some snacks. And appreciate your help with everything. And my intern over here, Len, thank you to her for all of her work. Oh, and I see we have another special guest in the audience, which I'll mention in just a minute. If we could have the testimony now, welcome to the committee. We just have a couple minutes. We're running a little bit behind. If you could state your name for the record and share your testimony.
My name is Joy Massard. I have a bilingual Spanish-English childcare in my home with a large education focus. Thank you, Chair and Committee, for graciously allowing me to present for providers by speaking today. The very nature of home childcare starts with a family opening their home to make a difference in the lives of children. There is a heavy rate of home providers leaving the business because it is demanding for them, their family, and hard on the house. Increased costs and regulations will drive more providers out of the field. Time will be taken away from the children when already busy providers have more paperwork. It's time for legislators to demand in writing what would be expected of providers for each star in the star rating. Providers use their skills and philosophy to impact the lives of children. The QRS is based on one belief system, the early childhood indicator of progress. Look at this example. Psychotherapy is a right way. Study and experts say it works. It is not the way for everyone. We also have behavioral and cognitive therapy in psychology. Dominating with one school of thought is against cultural diversity, individuality, and freedom. Parents would have one philosophy choice in childcare. It must look like the one model and the color is lost. Cost will increase for parents because of the cost to providers. Also, a star rating does not adequately reflect the quality of care for the parent. A parent doing a home visit is the only way to know the heart of a provider's care. The bill's purpose is, quote, ensuring all children are fully ready for kindergarten, end quote. It uses the word accountability. We step into dangerous ground when we create a system that makes them a provider accountable for that readiness instead of the parents. Even deeper, when the state takes on that responsibility, we have a very expensive system that has to pay corporations and specialists to enforce it. The money would reach the families quicker if it was used in other counties like we have in Scott County for education and enrichment. The providers that encourage parents to send their children to a preschool will not get grant money. The bill states that providers will receive public funding associated with the rating. Remember, for positive marketing purposes and to get grant funding, Parent Aware will not be voluntary. There is added cost to providers who make an average of $19,000 a year in Minnesota, pay their own health insurance and Social Security. Thousands of state money has been given to providers so they can meet the 4-star rating in Parent Aware. If this is statewide, it will be an expense to the providers. The assessment also creates liability issues. Are we to say that Monet, an impressionist, is only worth 2 stars because he does not have the fine detail and realism of the classical realism painters? Parent Aware imposes regulations that would make our home care models like child care centers. The very nature of home care is to have a relaxed, loving environment. Is a home provider starting with little resources and only 2 to 4 children in care less valuable than centered care with many children to one provider? We teach children methods, skills, and ideas, and then we set them free to create. This is what we must continue to do with child care providers. Child care is dominated by women with a few men. We have worked hard at women's rights, and finally we have a valid field where that nurturing nature can have some financial independence while being with our own children. Now this bill would take the government into our homes and dominate up to the curriculum that has to be approved. A caring nature should not be dominated, stereotyped, and belittled with stars. Providers are not idiots that can't discern the needs of the children and the families they serve. When parents look for care, their priority is attention and love. A loved child will thrive in kindergarten. Thankfully, individuals are starting to look at these concerns and make changes. Think about this, though. I have been told that the quality grading system is a sum of 10 years of work. What has happened in all this time? Why is this program so far off? That scares me. It's time for legislators to demand in writing what would be expected of our providers for each star. Most of us whom cannot leave the children that most providers of whom cannot leave the children that depend on them to come to the capital to be heard. Children get upset when their caregivers are gone.
If you can wrap up fairly quickly.
Two sentences.
Okay.
Please do not support a quality rating system at this time. The foundation here has been poorly done. This has to be looked at from its infancy so that the building or bill that is formed is not crooked. Thank you again so much for giving me the opportunity to speak.
You're welcome. And members, I wanted to do that because she had missed the testimony the other day. But now we need to move ahead. First of all, I need approval of the minutes. Representative Rosenthal? Representative Rosenthal moves approval of the minutes for April 7th. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the minutes for April 7th are approved. Members, before we start, I need to let you know that we are changing the bill that we are amending to from House File 1026 to House File 2088. The reason is a process reason, is that we need a bill that has gone through finance. So with the bill we had chosen, it had not gone the right path. I see we have the finance chair here with us for this meeting, so that's just the reason. House File 2088 was our stimulus bill, so it is taking that and doing a delete all to that bill instead. So all amendments, members, have to be amended accordingly to House File 2088. Representative Biskins, do you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, is House File 2088, if it's gone through finance, is it in the committee's possession to amend it?
Yes.
And how was that done, Madam Chair?
Would you like me to... You're looking this way.
Representative Carlson.
Well, we would have sent the bill to the division. So it should be in your possession.
Right. Representative Biskins, remember, in the way we have it structured, we send the bills to finance and then they send them back to the division.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. If I may ask Representative Carlson a question. Representative Carlson, so there was a report that showed that this bill was sent back to this division?
Madam Chair, I can check real quickly on that, but or maybe you've got it there. The process is when a bill is referred to finance, then we refer it, and as a member of the finance committee, you get a copy of all the bills that we refer their attached to the various things.
Okay.
And so we get a lot of bills, and I mean, this one was referred.
Representative Carlson, Representative Biskins, my understanding is as our process is all bills are sent to finance and then finance directs the bills. So the bill was sent to finance originally and then referred to our committee.
Okay.
That's why it's in our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One point. Thank you.
Madam
Chair, and I'm not, I'm not seeing black helicopters or thinking they're shenanigans, but if the bill isn't properly in this committee, we'd have to do this all over again another day, and I prefer not to.
Thank you. We would prefer to do it right, too, so please know I think we're on the same page on that one. With that, members, I would like to move that DE-1-3. Okay, first of all, okay. I'm going to move that House File 2088 as amended be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance. Okay, now we'll do the amendments. We don't do this every day, so it is a new process. Then I would like to take the first amendment, which is the DE-1-3. This is the one that we introduced the other day, members. So you have seen this before and it has been out. Okay. We do need to vote on it. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. The amendment is adopted. I did want to say I neglected one thing before starting here, is I just want to point out somebody in the audience members before we go on with the next amendment, and that's Chad Dunkley is here with us today. If you want to raise your hand, just way back over here. Chad has been very, very sick for a long time. And so for him to be able to come to committee and be here with us is a big deal. And we just want to let you know we missed you this session. Nobody challenged us like you do, Chad. So we missed that. But I think we came out okay, but we're glad you're here for our final hearing, and glad you're doing okay. So good. Thank you. Members, I'd like to move the A8 amendment. The A8 is the author's amendment. This is technical language. Issues that we found in the delete all. If we move it, all. Yeah, is there any discussion? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. The amendment is adopted. Next, we will start with the members' amendment. The A2 amendment, I think, Representative Downey, that's your amendment. Or is that Representative Verna?
I'm going to take that one. The the quality. This is addressing the quality system, quality rating system, and it's a voluntary system. This amendment basically just goes through the bill and the language, and makes it very clear that it is a voluntary program. So wherever it's referring to the program, basically it inserts the word voluntary with it. That's nothing more than that. Just make sure that it emphasizes it's voluntary.
Members, is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted. A26, Representative Rosenthal, is that, and Representative Lane, I think that's your Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the H2008-826 amendment, which starts on page 6. Page 6, line 21, after the semicolon, insert and. On line 1.4, page 6, deletes lines 22 through 25. And page 6, line 26, delete 10 and insert 9. And Madam Chair and members, what this does is strip out the 12-hour requirement for now. We think it's a good thing, and a good thing to strive towards, but we don't want to create any mandates on local governments, and we want to serve as many kids as possible. And we've heard a lot from the community, and we think at this time it's best to take it out.
Okay. Representative Rosenthal. Representative Lane?
Yes, Madam Chair. We've been hearing from community eds that this would cause them to serve half of the number of children that they are already serving. And many of them already have their programs in place for next year, maybe even registration already underway for next year. So it would be very, very difficult to start soon. But the key thing is that it's a major change, and they would only be able to serve half. Many agree that the need for preschoolers that are most at risk for being unprepared for kindergarten need a program of great duration and intensity, but without additional funding, this becomes a mandate that simply restricts the programming. It violates local control, it violates parental choice, it interferes with what we call a universal access model, where kids that are being, the parents are paying for the program, the kids, the people that are getting a sliding fee, and those who are getting the fee covered, are all those children are in the same program. So it's a universal access model, and so the kids have peer interaction with everybody. This would be hindered because only some of the children could be participating. It's unlikely that a parent who's paying for the fee themselves would pay for a 12-hour model. It would be too expensive. 12 hours is actually the same as what we've had for kindergarten. It would be like, I hesitate to say, but kindergarten for three-year-olds. it's a very serious change. And the teachers who, one of the Community Ed said that the kindergarten teachers tell us every year that children who attend our school readiness program, and that's less than 12 hours, are light years ahead of those who do not when they begin kindergarten. They come ready to learn. So there is success already with less than 12 hours, and we need to look at it more intensely in duration for some of the kids, but we can't just overnight switch like this. It's too much for the local areas. They need flexibility and options in their local programs. It's too much of a mandate to have all programs across the entire state do the same program. One size does not necessarily fit all. So until we can look at this more closely, we recommend that we take it out.
Any other comments? Members, all those in favor of the A26 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. A26 is adopted. Next is the A6.
Yeah.
Representative Carlson?
I indicated that I would check on that bill and was referred March the 24th to your division. So
okay. Thank you, Representative Carlson. So the bill is officially in the committee, House File 2088. We appreciate that. So we adopted A26, and we're on to A66. Who has the A6 amendment? Representative Downey moves the A6 amendment. Explain your amendment.
Yeah, thank you. Within the body of the text of the bill, it's pretty straightforward. We're just deleting on page 1, section 1, page 6, section 10, and page 8, section 12, and then obviously technically renumbering the sections in sequence. More importantly, in terms of the reason for doing that and the context where we had some preliminary discussion in our committee hearing, very preliminary last time when we heard the bill about the merits of making this kind of a shift. And I think there's a couple of good reasons to think about trying to have a more tightly integrated human services and Department of Ed integration within an Office of Early Learning. There's also a number of things organizationally that I think probably don't make sense. And number one is if you just think about the basic, the attempt to eliminate silos. Right now you have Human Services and Department of Ed trying to coordinate and collaborate in this early childhood space, and so there's a collaboration between those two organizations, and if you insert another organizational unit in between them, you've actually now created two handoffs between the Office of Early Learning and Education and between the Office of Early Learning and Human Services. So I think just from an organizational design standpoint, it creates a new silo that I'm not sure has benefits over the old silos. In fact, I think it has some costs, not just in terms of coordination and collaboration, but probably organizationally. And I don't know where the estimate of no cost arose from here in this committee, but I think over in the Senate side there's about $1 million attached to the creation of the Office of Early Learning. And just in quick discussions with the department, you know, details like technology and systems and administrative support chargebacks and all of these things, how would you actually create an office just from an accounting standpoint? Could you even do that without an appropriation? And some of my own experiences in state government is that if you don't own the bodies and you don't own the budget, you can't really do anything. And so I think creating an organization with a director title and assuming that they'd actually have an ability to organizationally get things done is probably maybe a little over-optimistic. And I also think if we wanted to create a director of an Office of Early Learning, perhaps one of the deputy commissioners on either side of the fence would make more sense. So for all of those reasons, we offer this amendment to hold off on creating the Office of Early Learning and at least for now leave it as is.
Representative Peterson, and then Representative Distance. Representative Peterson.
Thank you. You know, I think there's some misconceptions about what this office would look like. I'd like you to think of it more as a virtual office because it is not a separate office or a separate entity. It is a director, a person, a facilitator, a person who has the responsibility of trying to coordinate the different funding streams between the Department of Health and Human Services and the Department of Education. And it is no secret that this has been needed for a long time, and I think both departments would agree with this. And you could easily, it seems to me, I could figure this out, I think, that the governor gets to appoint someone. It may be somebody currently in those departments, actually, and just a reassignment of duties. It could be a deputy commissioner who could be named. But a deputy commissioner, I don't think, would have the same, would it be a deputy commissioner from Health and Human Services or from the Department of Education? It seems to me you need a director who is separate and can work with both entities. And we have put the office in, and we could even leave the office out, although I think that's just a virtual, as I said, a virtual office where we can assign these funding streams and the various components that are built into this bill. If you look at the programs on page 225 through the inventory, et cetera, and the kinds of information that we've needed, you really need an office, a repository, someplace. You can't assign those accounts to a director. It has to be to an office. So in some ways, it's kind of a name that you've assigned to this director. You know, every other state is doing this. In fact, this is really modeled after Pennsylvania, which has done it very, very successfully. And they've been able to coordinate these two with a director. And that's not the only state. Most states are doing this. And I don't see that it has to cost any more money. I'm not sure where Senate gets $1 million, but that will be interesting to see. I think it's one person reassigned, perhaps, or somebody, if they want to add a different person, that would be fine, too. And if they add one, that's, I think, $125,000. And then if they added an assistant, it's probably another, you'd end up to about $200,000 as a total amount if you added somebody from the outside to come in to do this. But I think there are a variety of ways that you can attack this, and we're really working very hard because I think this is a necessary component of implementing all of the things around quality rating system and the work that MELF has done and the work that the governor's advisory committee is doing right now. I mean, they're working and going full board at trying to develop an early learning system, and this would fit with that kind of a program. And so I would oppose your amendment.
Representative Biscoe?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, members, if I can turn your attention to page 7, starting on line 7.1 to 7.11, while the representative talks about this being a virtual office, the practical nature of the office is pointed out in 7.1 to 7.11. Not only is there an assignment of a director who's got to have a place to sit someplace, but all of the statutory duties that are assigned right now to the Commissioner of Education will be assigned to this Office of Early Learning. All of the positions, which I believe are sitting over in Roseville right now, are going to be assigned to this Office of Early Learning. All of the positions in the Department of Health Services are going to be assigned to this Office of Early Learning, and I don't think they are in Roseville. So these folks are going to have to come together someplace, right? And they're going to have infrastructure, the technology, the facility, etc. So there obviously is costs, and I think the powdered wigs got it right. You know, also there's some some practicality in the nature of where we are at today. Now, when our citizens in the state of Minnesota are hurting, when they're cutting back, when people are losing jobs, when businesses are moving out of the state, when times are tough, we as state leaders to say, well, sure, it's tough for you, but we're going to grow government. We're going to create a whole new office. We're going to create a whole new division of government. Doesn't make a lot of sense as leaders of the people of the state of Minnesota either. And for those reasons, I hope you support this. And Madam Chair, I'd ask for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. We do have Representative Hamilton and then Representative Mariani and Representative Peterson. Representative Hamilton?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering what prohibits either department from appointing somebody now to take on this responsibility?
What prohibits them from, well, getting agreement to, Madam Chair, I'm sorry. Representative Hamilton. I think you'd have difficulty finding one of them to agree that they would do that, but that could be done, certainly, and that person could assume that kind of responsibility.
Representative Mariani?
Madam Chair and members, I would oppose the amendment, but I just want to be clear. I mean, I think what Representative Peterson is laying out before us is a different way to do things. And believe me, I'm getting pretty beat up nowadays for suggesting all sorts of different ways to do things. but I am intrigued by this this notion that, and Representative Hamilton, your question's a good question. I think my answer to it is that while nothing may prohibit any of these folks from, in fact, collaborating, which is in essence what I think Representative Peterson is wanting to do, in the real world, they often need a very explicit directive from this body or from the governor to do so. Not always, but there's the strength behind having the law and the expectation in statute of two colleagues that, you know, in fact, may have spent many years in two different silos with all the stuff that comes with that, operating two different places, to say, you know what, we just simply have to work together because it's the law. You know, it is the expectation. We get the policy direction of lawmakers in this regard. As I read Representative Biskin's the all positions part, and I appreciate that. I'm wrestling with that. I wasn't necessarily picturing that you're actually physically moving people around to a place as much as, in fact, you are very clearly reassigning them with a very prioritized sense from this body, as the governor signs off on the bill from the governor, about the importance of doing business differently. And I know that, because I've been around here a long time, you know, my natural tendency, and you know that some distance is to, in fact, create a whole other entity and probably find a funding source for it. I think this is a new way to do things. I don't think you are creating a new entity, but the new entity is really about a collaborative style that is meant to work within, at least as I understood Representative Peterson's mm-hmm. representation of the bill, is meant to work within the existing fiscal realities of our state. So I respect the amendment where it's coming from. I think the important issues have been raised, but I would oppose it. I think we should go forward with this innovative idea.
Representative Ward?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Along with Representative Mariani's comments, as I have reflected on the whole early childhood family ed agenda this year, we've moved forward. We start off with a nice summit, and all of us have rethought, and we're actually getting people, I believe, in the legislature understanding the importance of early childhood and quality child care and everything that we're trying to do here. So to me, this provides leadership right now, leadership pulling people together. And I think that's what we need right now in this in early childhood is our leadership possibilities to continue to move us forward as Representative Mariani talked about. So I see this as more of a again using what we have, finding some real leadership within those agencies and taking the early childhood agenda, child care agenda, and moving with it. So I think it's a good thing.
Any other discussion?
Just a quick comment before we vote. Generally, the early childhood bills that I've dealt with over the last 13 years have been non-controversial and good and easy to vote for and everything else. I don't like to see us put anything into the bill that's going to cause some problems getting through the system, and particularly past the governor. And so I know they have some concerns about this. So when you're voting, understand that we also might be inviting, you know, a little trouble down the road if this doesn't prevail.
Representative Nornes, have you talked with the governor's staff in the last recently about this?
I have not.
I just wonder if maybe his position's changed at all since last year.
It has been communicated to others, his position, however.
Okay.
So I'm kind of, this is second handed advice, whatever you want to call it.
Representative Downey?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Real quickly, just to that last point, formally and in letter form, in response to the Senate, I think it was their overall education bill passing, the governor's response to that very explicitly called out the creation of the Office of Early Learning as a major problem for him. So I think absent anything, that I haven't heard anything to the contrary, I assume that would still hold. If I could, Madam Chair, just a couple more questions. So my assumption when I made the amendment and was that the positions actually do move, and yet we talked about a virtual, and I'm less interested in physical space and more about reporting structures and who owns the budgets and the reporting relationships and all of the other kind of incumbent charges that come with people housed in a unit of government. Is that designed yet?
Representative Downey, is it all designed? No. I don't see any, and if you talk about physically moving, no. And with technology these days and the ability of us to communicate via technology, I see no need for that, although maybe there might be some point when they might want to move some of the individuals with certain responsibilities in closer proximity, but at this point, I don't see that. I see the director as moving between departments, facilitating and basically trying to coordinate and be in charge of those accounts. Has it been designed yet? No. I mean, this is a bill to try to put those accounts under one heading, and so that the people who work in those departments then can work with this director to assure that we're using those funds efficiently and for the purposes that they were designed.
Representative Downey. Madam Chair, to make a final comment, and if others have comments, great. So my sense of this is that it's just probably, we all agree with the end, right, of creating a better cohesion between the human services and Department of Education, early childhood functions, and I really resonate with Representative Mariani's comments about trying to do something innovative that gets out of the box, that isn't the old structures, right, to try and do something new and different. But I look at this and see it's not very clear to me exactly how this works. It's not clear who the people report to. This individual has reports to two individuals, and I don't know any of you who've ever existed in that kind of a matrix situation. That's very difficult, if not impossible, and if the people aren't ultimately accountable to you for performance reviews and raises and promotions and all of those things, the thought that you could actually get something done, in my mind, is really quite a stretch. And I look at the tasks here to create a seamless transition. I assume this is kind of a statewide mandate that they're really responsible for this, from early childhood programs to kindergarten. Develop and oversee effective data collection systems, and yet we don't have any technology attached to this other than what exists in the other agencies, that they'd have to somehow go out and leverage effectively as one person. And then to plan and implement the quality rating system statewide. I mean, this is a huge mandate for one freelance early childhood expert, and I just think we've got a scope and a mission and a lack of kind of organizational design here that's going to doom this to failure, and we'll be rethinking it a year from now. Thank you.
Members, I'd like to move to a vote. Roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Frolic?
Yes. No, wait.
The amendment.
Yeah, here we are. The amendment. No. Sorry about that. I thought this was the phone of what I say.
Silver tongue devil.
No.
Why?
No.
Fiskin?
Yes.
Downey?
Yes.
Growling?
Yes.
Hamilton?
Yes.
Jackson?
No.
Lane?
No.
Mac? Excuse? Mariani?
No.
Mornis?
Yes.
Peterson?
No.
Rosenthal?
Yes.
Ward?
No.
On a vote of 6 ayes to 7 nays, the amendment does not pass. The next amendment, members, is the A15. Representative Biskins, I think that's your amendment.
Yes, it is, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, in a number of places throughout the bill, we use, or there is used, the all, the absolute term "all children." We're going to on page 1.8 to make such programs more effective and to improve the educational outcomes of all children. On 1.26, to ensure that all Minnesota children have access to high quality. And I'm not going to go through the rest of it, Madam Chair, but let's say that is a utopian goal, right? But it's not a practical reality. And putting it into law in this way, I think, creates a lot of unforeseen problems. Madam Chair, I know that in the Senate, when this issue was brought forward, it was accepted as a friendly amendment. I would hope that the Chair could consider that. But just in case, Madam Chair, I'm going to ask for a roll call.
Any discussion?
I'm new here, but I've heard that references to the other body, can, you know, what they're doing can really be ignored. That being said, I agree with no hitting them at all.
Representative Biskins, I think you're going to find it, you get a friendly reception over here as well.
Madam Chair, then I withdraw the roll call.
Thank you. And Representative, you still, we'll still need to vote on it. All those in favor of the A15 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment passes. A3? Oh, A14. I've got mine in a row here. I've got a... So, Representative Biskins, I think that's your amendment.
It is, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A14 amendment, and members, what the A14 amendment simply does is it strikes the sections in the bill and the appropriation section dealing with QRS. We heard the testifier here earlier, this committee hearing. And I've expressed concern about this prior to this meeting, Madam Chair, is that the QRS system is still in pilot. This legislature gave MELF a responsibility to pilot the quality rating system, and we gave them a deadline of the end of the year, 2011. And now we have in legislation a movement to bring the QRS system out of pilot and into a statewide mandate with, in this tough times, over $5 million in funding, right? And Madam Chair, I just think it's premature, so I ask for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Representative Peterson?
You know, the quality rating system discussion didn't start with MELF, interestingly enough. It's been discussed over at least the last 8 to 10 years, because there have been attempts, at least in small areas, to implement a quality rating system, and much discussion about the necessity to do so. And then the business community, whether it was the Itasca Group and the Business Partnership and others, and certainly the leader, Art Rolnick, who said, you know, this really is important that we have a quality rating system to assure that those children who are in our licensed centers or in our daycare centers or our school readiness programs indeed are getting the kind of a quality early education that will help them to be ready for kindergarten. And that's where, you know, it's been evolving over the years. And certainly MELF has been working very hard with SRA to do the evaluation, and that will be finally complete, but they have a great deal of data. And we also have, you know, a Kellogg grant right now to work with us on developing not only how we can develop the standards and work with them. This is a process. We'll probably be completely through by 2011, too, at the same time. But we plan to use all of the learnings that MELF has contributed so far and will contribute as we go toward developing these quality standards. And there will be a work group that's already been developed that will be working to put together this QRS system statewide. And so we want a chance to, these are basically pilots that we'll be doing. We don't plan to start implementing this statewide in 1 year. This is an attempt to move this into the arena of possibilities. And so it does give you some dates, and I think it's an exciting adventure for everyone in the early childhood area. And certainly we ought to be assuring accountability in the early childhood just as we want it for K-12 and higher ed. We're talking about accountability and openness and transparency in all of those places. We also need it in the early childhood area, perhaps more, because Art Rolnick will show all the research along with Arthur Reynolds at the university that the first 5 years really are the most important, and that the kind of learning situation that we create for those young children is really the most important of their lives and will make the difference.
Any other discussion? Members, a roll call has been requested, and the clerk will take the roll on the A14 amendment.
Wallach?
No.
Wine?
No.
Fiskin?
Yes.
Downey?
Yes.
Gryling?
No.
Hamilton?
Yes.
Jackson?
No.
Lane?
No.
Mac? Excuse. Mariani?
No.
Norman?
Yes.
Peterson?
No.
Rosenthal?
No.
Ward?
No.
Members, the roll call is 4 ayes and 9 nays. The amendment does not pass. Next. Members, we will have the A17 amendment. Representative Biskins, I think that's yours.
Well, Madam Chair, one more and I can go, I guess.
Well.
Now I'll stick around. Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A17 amendment to be before the committee for consideration. Madam Chair, a simple amendment. It deletes two words and three commas from the bill, and that has to do with creating standards that measure social and emotional development. Don't need to belabor the issue, especially for us who have been here for a long time. We know that that's a very contentious issue. Representative Nornes talked about early childhood bills being largely non-controversial. This is a very controversial two words, measuring a young and social and emotional development when the standards necessary for the measurement, the tools necessary for the measurement, the definition of what is a normal or abnormal toddler. You know, kids are people too, folks, and people are different, all right? We're all different, and without a clear definition or a clear set of standards on these issues, it creates a big problem, and so I'd appreciate your support on the amendment. Madam Chair, I ask for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Representative Lane.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I believe that what you're amending is provide comprehensive program content based on early childhood research focused on children's cognitive, social, emotional, and physical skills and development. I don't see assessment there. I see content. And I think we'd all agree that social and emotional parts of child development are key. You can't avoid attending to the social and emotional parts when you're with a little kid. In fact, the last A15 that we did in the early learning system you left in there would contribute to all aspects of children's development, and this is part of the all the aspects. It's very, very key. We grow with, we learn cooperative, empathetic, altruistic components because of our interaction with friendships and family groups. That's part of the social thing. We learn new ways of processing from those processing emotions, from those we respect, trust, and love. We learn excitement, awe, and joy in these social networks. We learn individual responsibilities for our emotional processing within social networks. You just can't avoid attending to social and emotional skill development in young children. It's part and parcel of who we are and how we grow, as you said, and providing comprehensive program content based on early childhood research focused on this is just simply a very logical thing to do.
Representative Rosenthal?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Lane. I don't think I can say this as well, but I do believe we have to look at kids in a holistic manner, and I have an 8-year-old and a 6-year-old, and their social and emotional upbringing and learning is a huge part of their development and can't be seen as separate. So I would urge members to vote no.
Representative Belling?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I actually have a subsequent amendment that deals with this from slightly a different perspective, but I don't think anybody would argue with how important social and emotional development is. I guess the question here at hand is whose ultimate responsibility is that, and what is the definition of a well-adjusted, socially and emotionally well-adjusted child look like? And I've got 3 kids, and I remember back when I was that age, and we're all different. A lot of people would say we're all pretty weird in different ways, and people develop, little kids develop at different stages. I mean, who among us doesn't know a child that didn't utter their first words until they were 4 or 5 or was just in a shell? And there's nothing wrong with them. It's not as though we have to cure them. It's not as though we have to norm them to some professional practice that comes out of an academic setting. So I really get apprehensive when we start in-state statute prescribing to the providers of these programs that they are responsible for, accountable to, legally, lawfully accountable to develop that child socially and emotionally. Boy, we start crossing a line that I get pretty uncomfortable with when we do that from the state perspective. So I don't think anyone argues with the importance or value. How, I guess, was the question.
A couple more questions. Members, just realize this was in the governor's bill. Representative Breiling, then Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, in the K-12 standards that we have, we used to have something in the profile of learning that was talking about students being able to work in groups, and that was roundly criticized, and we don't have that anymore. But yet when we talk to employers like the Chamber of Commerce, when I was there speaking to them a couple months ago, that was one of the things that they bring up and that I constantly hear brought up from employers, and that is that the biggest reason people fail in their jobs is because they can't get along with other people, they can't work in groups, and that is something that we really need to pay attention to with older kids. And this is the version of that for little kids. So we need to look at all kids and on the continuum. And then there are also all children who are abnormal. And we need to point them at resources. And I think that's a part of what they do in preschool. So I strongly oppose this amendment.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As an educator of emotional behavior disordered kids for 22 plus years, most of them in the secondary, but I also had an opportunity to work with children in the early years as well. And I do know this, having put those 22 years to test in that field, is that the earlier that we make an impact, the more likelihood of success later, just going along with Representative Lane's comments. And so I too am opposed to this amendment for that reason alone, is because the earlier that we can make a positive impact and redirect and make a change in a child's life for the future, the better off we'll be.
Representative Peterson, and then Representative Biskin is going to do closing comments, and we're going to vote. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just very quickly, and Representative Lane talked about it so wonderfully, and it doesn't talk about, as she said, assessments. It's about requirements, and I have been an early childhood teacher. I've been a kindergarten teacher as well as high school, and I'm here to say that you work with the social and emotional components of the child every day that you're in a classroom, because it's how they play together, it's how they interact with each other, it's whether they have a temper tantrum and how you deal with it and how they learn to deal with it. And it is just part of an inherent part of a curriculum when you're dealing with preschool children, that their social emotional development is just equally as important, and for them to learn how to deal with those aspects of their own personality are very important when you're working with young children. And so, you know, this I think is, you can't exclude it from a program and from program requirements.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. We're not talking about excluding the social well-being or emotional well-being. We're talking about intentional standards geared towards the development of guidelines and kindergarten standards. It's right there in the bill. I know what cognitive development is. I can measure that objectively. We can set down these are the things the child should be able to do at this stage. We know cognitive development. I can even understand the addition of physical skills and putting that down, because I can measure those objectively. I don't know how to measure social development. If a person is naturally an introvert, are they now maldeveloped? And is there a pattern, a blueprint for how we have to look at how kids are developed socially and emotionally? I think that's just dangerous ground. But I do appreciate the viewpoints of others, and that's the beauty of this process, is we can have those debates and discussion, Madam Chair.
His roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll on A-17.
Wallach?
No.
Lye?
No.
Biskin?
Yep.
Downey? Gryling?
No.
Hamilton?
Yep.
Jackson?
No.
Lane?
No.
Mack?
Excused.
Mariani?
No.
Norness?
Yes.
Peterson?
No.
Rosenthal?
No.
Wood?
No.
In a roll call of 4 ayes and 9 nays, the amendment does not pass. Next, we will have the A1 amendment. Representative Mariani, I think that's your amendment.
Madam Chair, I will move the A1 amendment. And members, we heard testimony on this issue last week when we heard about the efforts to reach out and focus on homeless families, families living in homeless shelters. And what this amendment would do is it would accept from the appropriation guidelines to Head Start for purposes of facilitating the Head Start programs to be able to serve homeless families or families living in homeless shelters. I think their testimony was well received here last week, and I think it's an important thing for us to do to encourage those programs to continue to find innovative ways to reach these families who obviously are falling outside of the sort of standard way in which we try to get families involved in these programs.
Any discussion, members? Representative Norton?
Yes. And Madam Chair and Representative, so the funding, where, how do they determine where that comes from? Who, somebody has to give up some money to provide this?
Representative Mariani?
Madam Chair, Representative Norton, I actually don't know how the funding technically works. It all has to nonetheless operate within the appropriations, but I think we have people here in the audience that can help answer that question.
You don't need to know the details, but as long as there's a method to do it.
In my understanding, the Representative Norton says it's neutral because it's Head Start slots, and so it's making sure that homeless kids, that there's some slots that they are available for them so they can go to participate in Head Start programs. I think the one time I saw it was over, it was in your district when we were on that poverty tour for Pelican Rapids or out in one of those areas where they were, because it's the stress on homeless families, the idea that the kids can go to Head Start and guaranteed so mom or dad can, you know, look for a job, that kind of thing.
Madam Chair, the issue of homeless children is not as large where I come from as it is down here, but I guess my main concern was that some kids may not be, may have to lose or not be in the program to fill those slots. That was my main concern, that some kids may have to be dropped from the program in order to, you know, pick up additional children.
Madam Chair, I don't, it's a good question. I don't know the answer to it, but I think we do have people here that could quickly answer that.
Well, briefly, Ms. Dolson, if you want to come down and fill us in on that. So our... is anybody displaced if the slots are open for homeless kids, or can you answer that, how that works?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Valerie Dozlin. I represent the Minnesota Head Start Association, and I might defer to Michelle Weber at the department as well. In order to be able to, for this language, you have to have the Head Start program that's approved to provide innovative services, and they're already approved to provide innovative services to homeless families. What we're trying to address here is there's also a statute that directs the Department of Education to adopt an enrollment policy, and there are sanctions if a Head Start program doesn't meet the requirements of the enrollment policy. This just says that if they have an approved innovative services program that serves Head Start families, they don't need to meet the requirements of the enrollment policy.
Ms. Weber?
Madam Chair, members, my name is Michelle Weber with the Department of Education, and essentially what the program does, Representative Garnas, is they reserve the slots for the homeless family, so there would not be any children who would lose services as a result of them.
All right. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? A1 is adopted. Next, we're going to do the A3. With this, members, I wanted to, you could call it the halfway point or seventh inning stretch or whatever you want to call it, because I want to talk about two things. One, I want to thank you all for your participation in the committee. It was kind of funny the other day when Rudy was thanking me as the chair, and I want to say it's all about all of us. So you all helped put this bill together. And as we go on to Representative Carlson's committee tomorrow, Ways and Means, Taxes, and the floor, this is a team effort as we go through this. So I appreciate the work of everybody, all the members, and of all the staff. Also, take some food if you would like some now. If you want a little snack, the audience, we want this eaten before we go. So after we're done, if people want some, it's also to say thank you. And then, Representative Downey, I guess, you know, I'd like you to explain the next amendments and why we're doing them separately. If you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I actually owe the committee an apology. We had a series of amendments that you're looking at here today that, based on some information that we received last week, we thought we could combine into a delete-all that would actually, in some ways, kind of present the minority report omnibus bill. And with a lot of hard work on the part of staff who we put through the ringer on Thursday and Monday, we got very close, but unfortunately a couple of numbers didn't tie out, and it would have been irresponsible, frankly, to bring a delete all that didn't really tie out in a true fashion as an omnibus bill. So I just tried to push too many marbles through the straw at the end, and so we're dealing with these as individual amendments. But I think they still convey adequately some of the concept that we were going to try to get across with the delete all. And maybe I can just give a quick introduction because I think it fits the bulk of the rest of the amendments, at least that I have. And the first is, we heard a lot, and I don't know that there was much dispute, that absolutely the best place for a child to learn and grow is within a healthy nuclear family. And I think what we're trying to put forward in this next series of amendments is to actually put some of that into action within our early childhood programs. And there's also a recognition that there are a set of low-income families with at-risk kids who I think warrant the focus of the attention of the state as compared to others. And I think there's also a realization that in some of those settings, those families just aren't prepared or able to do what we would need them to do in order to prepare their kids for kindergarten and really give them a chance. And so I think the state programs really should be focused on, perhaps even limited to, those kinds of settings. And that, in fact, from what I've been able to tell from all the studies we've looked at, I think there's a real high linkage between really intensive kind of high-touch programs such as the MELF pilots and some of the other programs that we saw, the Chicago studies and things from long ago. Those are all very highly intensive programs, pretty expensive, frankly. So combining that emphasis on low-income, at-risk kids and a recognition that kind of one-size-fits-all and industrialized model probably won't have the results that we want, this series of amendments was designed to try and communicate some of that and put forward a bit of a philosophy of early childhood through that omnibus delete-all vehicle, and we'll do the best to convey some of that here through these amendments.
Thank you. I do have to say we were very patient until about 1:30, and then we found out that it wasn't going to work, so I appreciate the staff time. It is, we know their time is very valuable this time of year, especially, and so we appreciate that, and we'll walk through these amendments. Members, we normally adjourn at 6. We have the room till 6:45. We would like to get out of here at 6:15, ideally. So there are members that have to go to other committees. So if we can proceed from there, let's take up the A3 amendments. Is that yours, Representative Downing?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just take the rest of these to try and make it move as quickly as possible. So the A3 amendment takes what I just described and puts it in the purpose statement under the school readiness programs section. So you can read as well as I can in lines 1.7 through 1.10, the emphasis on cognitive and participation skills, and notice the difference there between social, emotional, and participation. It seems to me that the goal is to have them able to function well in kindergarten, not trying to align them to some social or emotional norm that the state defines. So participation skills is the words or the word used there. And then you can see the emphasis on at-risk children in low-income families. So the hope is that we would adopt this as an extra clarification and focusing within the purpose statement for school readiness programs.
Okay, any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Amendment is not adopted. A5, Representative Downey, is that your amendment?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Essentially the same thing, however, over on the ECFE side of things, you can see the language again in lines 1.10 to 1.12 of the amendment. So I would move the A5 amendment.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Amendment is not adopted. The A11, Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill actually reinvigorates a program that existed previously, the at-home infant care program, and in an effort to not simply have early childhood programs that provide financial support to people who are leaving their kids outside of their own home. This is an attempt to provide a funding stream, if only on a short-term basis, for 2 years, where we have an ability to leverage our current financial situation. I don't want to call it a pilot. It's an existing program that has existed in the past for infants, and now we expand the definition to include children up to age 5. So this would actually allow somebody, as compared to simply taking basic sliding fee scale monies and using them for out-of-home child care settings, it would allow them to utilize that kind of money to keep one of the parents in the home, raising the children according to the way they would want to in their home. And this actually occurred to me as we were getting testimony from a couple here. They had two kids with them. It was rather emotional testimony. And they described their family income as $50,000 between the two of them, and what a struggle it was to try and afford their child care. And at the time, of course, we were talking about possible cuts on the human services side of things. And it occurred to me, if the statistics are right, that up to 30% of a low-income family's income goes to child care. That couple was spending $15,000 a year on child care. I think we can all envision the scenario where that's easily the case. And it also occurred to me that if one of those two parents makes $20,000 and the other makes $30,000, that if they only had $5,000, one of those parents could stay home with their kids, and yet here we are as a state, perhaps paying them $7,000 a child to put them in a program. And so this program is intended to say, if we allocated that same amount of money to parents, in this case a two-child family, that mother who was sitting here so distressed could actually stay home with her kids and raise them the way she wants under this program. So that is the intention of this program, and I appreciate that it would be extending it to a broader age range and that there'd probably be something to learn from it. And so it's a two-year program, along with some of the kind of data collection features of the current bill. Hopefully we'd learn a lot and be able to take a stock of whether the program is working at the end of it, but actually try and do something like that that would allow parents to keep their kids at home. And I need to mention that on the amendment, oops, I'm on the wrong one. There's my A11. Do we have a dollars change here? Oh, no, this one. Excuse me. On this particular bill, I was pointed out on line 1.3 of the amendment that it should be inserted on page 13, line 16, for extra clarity. It was tucked under a paragraph that might have confused people. It was brought to my attention by Human Services. So with that, I'd offer my amendment. Thank you.
That's kind of cool, Jack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got a million questions. It's the sort of thing that I would have loved to have heard some testimony. And I'll rattle a few off, and maybe you want to write them down. But I don't know anything about the original program except that it hasn't been funded for the past 2 years. So was it used by a lot of people before? I don't know. Was it successful? And if so, how was that measured? I don't know. Where's the accountability? We're using government funds, and there doesn't seem to be an accountability component when we've been talking so much about the importance of a child's early years for their development and their school readiness, and that seems to be absent. So I guess that's my bundled questions for Representative Downing.
Representative Downing.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My understanding of the program was that it was not used by a lot of people. It was not funded very substantially. The information that I had from folks at Human Services is that it was actually positively received. One piece of feedback was that it would be helpful, maybe even important, to pair up a program like this with access to ECFE programs so that if the parent were in a situation where, you know, having that kind of resource available to them, that would be maybe a co-component of it. So there's quite a bit to learn. And I guess on the accountability front, I just inherently trust parents to do the right thing for their kids. And I guess if I don't know that why accountability would be any different. I don't think the state, absent an abusive situation where Child Protective Services is involved, why they wouldn't have the same expectation of accountability for parents who aren't receiving state funds as those who are. So I would have a general trust. I think, you know, making sure that the funds are used right, that the parent isn't working, that it's not abusive in any way, those would be the standard accountabilities of any state program.
What about Rep. Kulwick Jackson's question about why you didn't bring this forward in a bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Without going into exorbitant detail, it was just last week, Thursday, where we discovered that we had an ability to refinance certain sections of stimulus funding. And at that point, new options appeared to us. The previous scenario was we were living under a cut scenario in human services under the governor's preliminary budget, basically a hold harmless scenario with some increases now. There just was no money to even explore this. So again, I think the preferable scenario would have been to have brought this bill, long ago and had a discussion, but absent funding mechanisms, it sure didn't make sense, and I didn't see any way to do that. So I'm hopeful that, maybe this is just the start of a policy discussion that will be a fruitful one for us here going forward, regardless of its future as an amendment to this bill.
Who said you could refinance the stimulus fund?
Defer to House Fiscal?
Can you share with us, is that?
Well, Madam Chair, what this amendment is actually doing is refinancing some of the underspending for the basic sliding fee program. So, and that's appropriate to do in this situation.
Madam Chair, if I could just clarify my comments, it was only under the perspective of being able to refinance, I think it was about $26 million of CCDF and stimulus funds that some of these other funding avenues opened up to us and priorities and different decisions could be made. That was what really prompted this, and I do appreciate that we're using the excess sliding fee funds for this.
I think members need to note that refinancing of stimulus funds is possible.
Madam Chair, I should also add that it is our understanding from the agency, the Department of Human Services, that there is the ability to refinance the federal ARRA funds.
So you're going to some sort of like TANF refinancing?
Yes, that's right.
Any other questions, Representative Kulik-Jackson?
I think Representative Downey, thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, as a start of a discussion, it's certainly, I don't disagree that, a child at home with a loving parent is a wonderful thing and preferred. But I see this as the start of a discussion and nothing that I can support. But I like it as the start of a discussion. And, hopefully we'll come back next year and talk about how we can keep loving parents at home with little children.
Any other discussion? Representative Lane? Oh, Representative Pearson. First, Representative Pearson, then Representative Lane.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just can't resist, and I think it really is an interesting idea. And if the bill had come and we had more data and more time and research, it's good discussion. And I say that because this summer I had opportunity to have relatives, extended relatives from Sweden here, young mother with three children, and they have the opportunity as young mothers to stay home for 3 years if they choose with their children. And the government pays for that time that they're there away from work, and they get that kind of subsidy to be able to do that. It's a pretty big tax piece for their government, but they feel it is worthwhile. And so even though this is just a little piece in that, and I do sometimes think that we send our young mothers after 6 weeks back to work, or they feel the necessity of going back to work because they don't have the resources or the leave time to be able to stay with their children any longer. So I think this does warrant more discussion. My comments.
Yes, I too. I like in terms of the European model of having a parent allowed to stay home and have that not have to earn that income. But we had this discussion earlier privately. But I think that there is a major catch 22 here because an eligible family must meet the eligibility factors under Section 19B.09, which starts out with child care services are available to families who need child care to find or keep employment or to obtain training or education necessary to find employment. And that's the beginning step in order to be eligible. So therefore, if you stay home, you would no longer be eligible, so therefore you wouldn't get it. And so my concern is that you need to do more work around what eligibility actually is.
All those are going to vote on the A11 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. The amendment is not adopted. The A21 amendment, Representative Downey, is that yours?
Yes, yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. People are going to be very tired of me soon.
sort of intermingled distance. Oh, well.
Well, this is the delete all in separate amendment. So I would move the A21 amendment and make a technical note that with your amendment, which was adopted, the dollars on line 1.26, we need to delete 1,350,000 and replace it with 633,000. And delete the 1,275,000 and replace it with 558,000. The available funds changed based on the amendment that's already been adopted.
2088.
So, yeah.
Okay. What was the first number?
633,000.
The second was 558?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the purpose here is one that fits an overriding theme that I think we're seeing in a lot of grant and state program areas, and that is trying to maybe tie the payment of funds to specific outcomes or specific program attributes. We're starting to collect that data over Indeed, and I guess hopefully in alignment with some of Representative Mariani's comments that doing some things differently without having to radically change the system might have some results. So this amendment, and actually one following it, can look very much the same. Basically says that a percentage of the funding stream should be paid to the recipient organization based on its ability to show evidence of meeting some of these components, specifically serving low-income parents, facilitating interaction between children and their parents or other relatives in the program, and focusing a bit more on the cognitive side of things. And so what we did, the payment streams, I think traditionally are about a 90-10 split, and we thought about using 10% of the payment to these organizations and allocating that 10% based on their ability to meet these performance requirements, and these would be defined and fleshed out by MDE. But however, given that we have an accounting shift in the bill that we're looking at now of 7327, it actually makes it a little easier numerically to take 27% of the funding and allocate it according to these performance criteria. So pay for performance might be too strong a word, but pay for adherence to certain program guidelines and program parameters is what we're getting at here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Downey, and the concept is interesting, but the ECFE programs, now the first one seems like, you know, it's doable because that's dealing with low-income parents. But, and the second one even, the idea of learning activities with interaction, I mean, that's what they do in that program, but when we get down to three, with the literacy and numeric proficiency, I think that's very unclear, and I'm not sure. In ECFE, I don't think they work with the parents, and they don't really do, as far as I know, they don't do that assessment with the students. It's more how do we work with the parents and the students to learn how to do some of those things, but I don't think they do an assessment. And so to put the, you know, the entitlements in aid based on that, and then it says that the department will distribute a numeric scoring system for each performance requirement. I think we need to do a little more talking with ECFE a bit to see if this fits with what they're doing. The idea certainly is good about dealing, you know, being sure that ECFE is dealing with low-performing students, and I know that the Department of Education has wanted more outreach. So that part is really great, but I think we need a little more discussion before I feel comfortable voting for all of this.
Maybe a bill next year would be good, too, that we could have a hearing on that. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The other amendment is not adopted. We have two more. The A22 Representative Downey, I think that's yours.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'll withdraw this amendment. It is essentially the same amendment as the previous, and we've had the discussion already, except it was applying to readiness, school readiness programs.
Representative Downey withdraws the A22 amendment. And the A23 amendment, Representative Downey, if you want to explain that.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I'd move the A23 amendment, and I would ask for a roll call vote on this particular amendment.
Representative Downey moves A23 and asks for a roll call. Would you like to explain it?
This is a slightly different version of the previous amendment that Representative Biskins had. It does delete Section 5, i.e. the statewide rollout of the QRS, thinking that the statewide rollout is a bit premature, pending the full delivery of the MELF study. And so what we do here is actually allocate some monies to the completion of the MELF study. So I know they're perhaps looking for funds through private sources and things that we would allocate money is in that direction, but tie that to some very specific deliverables from them. My fear is that as that study winds down and if they are short on money and having a hard time holding on to staff, that we might not get in a formal way the deliverables that you might expect. So you can see the specific items numbered 1 through 11. That would be specific outcomes expected of MELF in their final study, and more specifically down in item number 11 on line 2.32, an actual implementation plan. I know we had some testimony from Dr. Rolnick and Wayne Benson and others talking about what would actually be delivered to us as a legislature at the end of their project, and I asked a very specific question about would we get a roadmap for how to actually implement this, and there was some discussions about what components should be public and what should perhaps be private, and I feel like we haven't seen any of that, and that in a very formal deliverable back from that project team, getting a roadmap and a plan for how you actually implement that, what's the timeline, what's the organization that's required, the staffing, along with these other kind of more study analytical components as well, that would be extremely valuable. So that's really the gist of trying to get more out of the MELF study by funding it a little bit and holding them a bit more accountable to delivering some things for the funding. And then lastly, the use of some monies on line 3.6 and 3.7, and actually those numbers change too. That's $321,000 and $320,000 that actually come from the I think are those from the quality components of the stimulus funds? Yes, those are from the quality components of the stimulus funds to actually keep some more pilots going on the allowance front within the MELF program. So that's the amendment to continue to reinvigorate or invigorate the MELF program and have them bring back their results to us.
Representative Downey, we have a concern about how this is funded. I want to ask the department to come down, Human Services, that the can the stimulus funds be used for this purpose of funding the allowances? So first, I have to see if that's an allowable use. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Sharita Filmick, and I'm with the Department of Human Services, and I administer the Child Care Assistance Program. And you specifically wanted to know about the pre-kindergarten exploratory project section?
Well, Ms. Katona, you had sent us an email on what stimulus funds could be used for. Can they be used for this purpose?
I'm not exactly sure what the response would be in the current environment for exactly the conditions that exist right now. Last year, the department, in response to lots of questioning about whether CCDF funds could be used for allowances, did ask a specific question to the Child Care Bureau and got a very quick response saying that the pre-K exploratory project or pre-K allowances needed to be considered direct services, and since they were currently being funded with state funds, that they would consider any use of CCDF funds for that purpose to be supplanting. I don't know if state funds run out and there's a gap and you start again, if that's the planting, we haven't gotten firm guidelines about anything related to the ARRA funds on that. The other directive that they gave us related to direct services is if the state spends any money on direct services, the families receiving the direct services have to meet the requirements of the Child Care and Development Fund eligibility guidelines. So things like there needs to be an income eligibility, there needs to be a co-pay, there needs to be parent choice, a number of factors need to exist in order to have use the fund for direct services, and the Child Care Assistance Program in Minnesota is shaped based on those factors.
Well, I was thinking that was going to be more definitive. Is there any other discussion? Representative Peterson, then Representative Mariani. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think that, you know, there's a question about the money, but we already, and I alluded to this before, that there is a work group that does much of what you are suggesting in this particular amendment, and it's funded by the Kellogg Foundation. And its focus is to plan and implement and finance a statewide, how to do this statewide quality rating system. And it will work with MILF, and it will identify issues that need to be addressed to scale the Minnesota QIRS, because we may not be able to implement the Parent Aware project, as it probably is going to be far too expensive. So how do we scale that? How do we make it work for Minnesota? And then develop two or three models for scaling with pros and cons for each one, and certainly be advised by the work of MILF and working with them. And then determine how to monitor implementation in order to make or recommend adjustments as necessary during the scaling. And so that is the main purpose of that particular committee, and it's based on the notion that it'll provide a vital framework for all early care and education services in our state. And so we're hoping that when we're done, the appropriate system will be in place, and we'll be able to use all the information we have to put together something that is Minnesota unique. But I think much of what you have here and the money that you would use has already been put in place by this particular grant from Kellogg.
Representative Mariani? Okay, a roll call has been requested on the A23. The clerk will take the roll.
Wallach?
No.
Bly?
No.
Biskin?
Yes.
Downey?
Yes.
Riling. Hamilton?
Yep.
Jackson?
No.
Lane?
No.
Mack? Excuse? Mariani?
No.
Norness?
Yes.
Peterson?
No.
Rosenthal?
No.
Ward?
No.
Island.
On a roll call of 4 ayes and 8 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Members, that's it for the amendments. I want to thank everybody for participating in the process. It always is interesting to see what comes up, and encourage people to submit bills in the future if we can further err on these ideas. If you have a minute, stay afterwards, have something to eat and something to drink, and then we are going to pass the bill here, and then we'll be done. So I renew the motion that House File 2088, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The bill is passed. Thank you, members. The meeting is adjourned.